arms limited.
I leave me by myself. Yes, so Rob, I just need a, pretty much in the lower Eparima presentation, we've covered off a lot of my submission.
Yep.
So I've got two or three wee things that I need to cover off that were separate from that. We, some background of ourselves, my wife and I own a property at Gummies Bush, which is in the lower Eparima catchment group, and that's under Dairy. And another dairy farm in the Waipunamun catchment, which is on the upper reaches of the Matera, on the east side of the river there. It's under irrigation. And one of my submissions was on policy 21 on the allocation of water for the Galvey. Now, 42A came out, I refer you to 8.458, when the original draft of the water and land plan was prepared, the Garvey Aquifer was classified as a separate groundwater resource from the overlying unconfined aquifer. However, improved hydrology data, do I need to read that or have you read that?
No, you don't need to read it.
So what I'm concerned about is I want to know where the science and data to support the Garvey Aquifer is leaky. Where is this and why haven't the submitters been able to see this? This has been based on a recommendation from Mr. Hughes in an Appendix C4 report, which I assume that's a summary of the report, or is that the report?
We can't help you with your questions. Those
okay.
are sort of questions you need to.
I hope that's noted. If you can demonstrate to me that this is a leaky a groundwater zone, then aquifer, then I can understand that we can appropriately manage the situation differently. But my concerns are that ES have gone off a hydrologist's recommendations without providing the supporting evidence. If this is the outcome, then I need to know how to intend to apply the allocation. So with the Garvey moving into the Wendon side, then that will possibly lead to restrictions on that allocation for us. We've invested $1.5 million in irrigation infrastructure on 250 hectares. That's $6,000 a hectare on this property. The uncertainty of water availability has a major impact on the ability of the property to carry on under its current land use. So I wanted that noted on top of the other parts of the submission that we've talked about with the Lower Eparima catchment group. Is there any questions on that part?
Yeah, just so the 42 officers have recommended to us that the Garvey Aquifer provisions be deleted out of Appendix L5. So do you oppose that or support that?
So what's happened, and this is the way I'm reading it, is that I support that they've removed that, okay? Mm-hmm. But what they've also done is then shifted it into the Wendon side groundwater management. Okay?
Yep.
So then it becomes under that anyway.
Yeah, understand that concern.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was going anyway.
To the reporting officers, this is a reasonably technical issue. Can you, as part of the reply, find the time to sit down with Mr. Hopcroft and just talk through the issues that he's raised, and then in the reply come back to us with a discussion and recommendation in that regard? So rather than trying to drill into it now, we'd like
yep.
to talk to you and see if
appreciate that.
Yeah.
And then it's just in summary, really, I guess I feel the other point was around that, and this has been reiterated this morning, around the economic impact. So I feel that there's more work that needs to be done on the economic impact of the water and land plan. I would like to see a full economic report that is up to the required standard to adequately model the likely economic impacts of this plan. I feel that it hasn't, existing report is not enough. And also on the physiographic zones, referring back to policy 2-12 on the physiographic zones, been mentioned this morning as well, the accuracy of the scale of those mapping. And I know we're 50 metres out. I've spent a lot of time in a ditch, and I know we're 50 metres out on our farm in particular, and it seems to be right across our catchment. And that can make a significant difference. But otherwise, I had mentioned in a general comment in my submission about the focus on farming. You know, the plan seems to be really focused on farming, and I believe that urban and industrial members of our region need to be accountable for water quality also. So that was a note on the outside general comment. Otherwise, that is all I have. And in summary, I guess it's just in regards to making sure that in reference to the Resource Management Act, that we continue to have those pillars around economic, social, cultural and general well-being of people's ability to operate, and we still want a good Southland community with quality water. That's me.
Great, thanks very much for that. Just in terms of the issue you raised about the focus of the plan being on the rural sector, it's been raised by a number of submitters. You may not be aware that on Tuesday of this week we had a whole day of presentations and evidence from the three territorial authorities in the region. They are concerned about the provisions on the plan that address stormwater and wastewater network discharge consents. So I'm kind of curious that people have this view of the imbalance, because my reading of the plan is there is very much a balance in there, and the provisions target the municipal authorities just as much as they target the rural sector.
Yeah, I guess it's how you read the plan, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But we did, yeah. I mean, the TLAs will give you a totally different view of that.
Correct.
Yeah, I'll just see if we have any questions for you, Morris, starting at the moment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Hopcroft. In relation to Rule 13, you say an allowance needs to be made for drain tile cleaning using water blasting. This is something that other people have brought up too, and we've asked them, and I wonder what your thoughts are on it in relation to the dirty water that results mm-hmm. from that. What can be done to mitigate or reduce the effects of that dirty water coming out and going into a drain? Can you capture that so that, or reduce it?
Totally impractical. Within, and we carry out this practice ourselves, and it's probably a 15 to 20 year and possibly sometimes a 5 year occurrence on some of those field drains within 15 minutes. Providing there's adequate flow in the main creek that your that tile's going into, then within 5 minutes it's cleared. So you're talking about a rust that built up in a tile that's built up over 5 or 10 years, for however long you've, and within 5 or 10 minutes that has no significant discoloration within that. So I don't think, to me, there's any practical way other than allowing some time that will flush itself out. I can practically show you that one day, Morris, if you want to come out and visit.
Yeah, and I'm pretty familiar with the practice, but you'd say 5 minutes, is that always 5 minutes, less, more? It depends
it's all about flow and volume, so if... If the tributary that it's running into is actually running at normal flow, then it won't be long at all before that has disappeared. And the 20 metre, 42A, they come out with a 20 metre creek, okay? So I'm not too sure who's going to stand there and measure it, but at the end of the day, the farmers, once again, under good management practices, has to pick whether this is going to have a major effect for days or hours or minutes. So we've got other big fish to fry than that, I think.
I don't know if you were here right at the start of the day, but we are a bit constrained, not from this plan, but from the Resource Management Act, which says we're not allowed to have a permitted activity that causes a conspicuous discoloration to surface waters if it's a discharge. So, you know, and then if it affects the area outside of the mixing zone, or, you know...
Yeah, I guess, you don't do anything at all, so the tile becomes blocked, and then you have overland flow, and you have phosphorus and sediment runoff over that area, okay? So you've got to weigh up what's the better option, okay? It's a practice that's been happening for some time, and I think it's been managed well, and I don't think that it has a major effect on the length of time into waterways that would have an effect on habitat, wildlife and people's recreation.
The other question I wanted to ask was about, and the chairman actually just asked a question about this, I think, a few minutes ago. In relation to Rule 25, you say, if you are not within 500 metres of a waterway and there is flat land to act as a buffer, you should be able to cultivate over 20 degrees, as there is a minimal risk of runoff or of sediment. Could you enlarge on that and your reasons for it?
So you repeat that one, Maurice, which one are you referring to?
Rule 25. Yeah. Your main submission.
Yes.
Rule 25 is in relation to cultivation on slopes.
If you are not within 500 metres of a waterway and there is a flat land to act as a buffer, you should be able to cultivate over 20 degrees as there is a minimal risk of runoff. So, okay, so we've got to pad it right, and at 300 metres out from the creek or the tributary, there is a degree of slope greater than 20 degrees, okay. Then it drops down to 3 degrees as we head across the plain.
Yeah.
So as long as you've got a critical source area and buffer zone on that lower, right by the creek itself, then you're going to capture a lot of that potential runoff from the sediment from that cultivation. Now, once again, good management practice around timing of when you cultivate and actually timing of grazing of those areas and creating those critical source buffer zones. So I think it's just, once again, a practical example, and I've got those on my property. Some properties won't have them at all, so it's horses for courses.
You say 500 metres, which seems a long way. Do you really mean 500? You just said 300 a minute ago.
If you're not within 500 metres of a waterway and there's flat land, I think that's...
Submission, that's what it is.
Yeah,
Sorry?
No, the chairman just saying submission, that is what you said, but I'm just wondering why you said 500 metres.
Example.
Okay.
If I'd said 450, just an example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you. That's all.
On the last page of your submission, you asked for some definitions to be provided for.
Correct.
And there was the Section 42A did make some changes to the land holding. Have you had a look at that, and does that answer your...
No, I haven't, Edward, on that one. Are you going to run that past me, or will I have to look at it?
If you're willing to have a look at it and come back to us, that would be great, if you could find the time to do that. And if you do have the inclination and the time, if you could do that by Friday week, that would be great.
That's gold. all these guys got up at 4:30 this morning, so we'll find some time.
That's my only question.
No questions. Lloyd, any questions?
Yeah, I just follow on from Edward there. That would be of interest to us, even if it was a subgroup of your catchment group. Looking at that would be great. I presume also with Rule 23, tens of winter grazing, that your view is the same as what we discussed with the Aporema group, with a percentage, with a cap, and then consenting outside of that.
Yeah. Same.
Yep, and then Rule 20, you picked up the audit process as well, and time between audits, the plan refers to reviews. Do you have a view on how, what was the stimulus for the comment in your submission?
So, I support the concept of the farm plans, it's in Rule 20. In regards to reviews, is your question about how often do they
down there how the farm plans are to be managed, and then the next point is the audit process, and then the next point is time period between audits.
Yeah, so that's what we want clarity on. Are you asking me
asking you for your view whether that should or could be done in a different or better way. The plan talks about reviews, which is an on-farm review.
Which to me is at least 6 months or annualised anyway. And these guys, naturally that's what happens in your own property. I guess you're talking about the audit rather than the review.
The appendix N talks about a yearly review.
Yes.
And then if it's a substantial, and then a three-yearly review after that, unless it's a substantial change in farming practices.
Yep. So to me, a three-yearly review would be enough. Providing the last part of that was the change in farm. And if that was a small change, say 20 hectares was added onto the property, then that gets added in, it gets amended, and then it gets forwarded. So if it needs to be available, which currently in the plan it needs to be available.
The appendix N really talks about a significant change, e.g. sheep to dairy or some other major change, then it would stimulate a review.
So that's going to happen anyway, isn't it?
But a little bit around the outside, minimal changes, farm practice was not intended to be captured, but if you think that has, through the wording, it would be good to know that but it's meant to be a substantial change. So sheep to dairy would be a substantial change.
Yeah, so obviously effluent consent renewal, so those sort of things, you know, that's a subset.
An effluent renewal is a normal process, but if you change from dairy to something else, that would be a substantial change. In other words, the overseer numbers would change because the farming practices change.
Correct. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No further questions from me, thanks very much for coming in and answering our questions.